time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. It was this exact week back in October 2017, 1 year ago, when you first heard Viewpoint This Sunday broadcast. Well, the top news stories that week were the Uranium One scandal, tax reform, will it pass, and how are folks defining Trumpism, and will it work? Well, we continue to bring you the top stories from top experts in their field every Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just this past month, we realized the need for a midweek version of this outstanding news magazine. Every Wednesday now at 6 p.m., you have Viewpoint, the midweek report. Now, none of this would be possible without the talent and commitment of our Out Loud family of experts and the countless contributors that have graced this weekly production. They truly are the reason this show has reached the level of success that it has. Along with our producers, Jim McKay and Ava Armstrong, who commit themselves every week to bringing you the best news magazine in the world. Well, friends, as we look forward to the future with you, we take a look back today over the past year to see how we got here together. I guarantee you'll learn plenty, you'll laugh some, and you'll be richer for the journey ahead. A tremendous thank you to each of you. Enjoy the show, friends. I want to introduce you again to our panel here. This is a great, great group of folks here. Dr. Steven Steinbein is here. He's the senior policy analyst at the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C. Ilana Friedman joins us. She's a veteran intelligence analyst, focuses on the impact of terrorism. Dennis Santiago is here. He's a global risk and financial analyst. And Ava Armstrong rounds out our panel. I think let's start, first of all, with this visa lottery program. And then, of course, you've got chain migration. Dr. Steinlight, the immigration thing, just back a few days here, there was big conversation that maybe we would get some serious reform here in immigration. It seems like the last couple of days here, the tide is turning that we're not going to get that, as reports are coming that we are far away from a deal here. So what do you think happens here with all of this? How do we bring this immigration thing forward?
I'm going to say something. I think that we could have a deal, but I think there are a number of things that are very likely to sink it. First of all, I think we have to start out understanding that the Democrats not only have political reasons for not wanting a deal, but their hatred for the president is beyond. Anything. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, the kind of ugly comments that came out of that meeting by the president didn't help matters. Mm-hmm. We also have a situation where his fixation on the wall, we'll see how far that goes, is so great that it's possible that he would sink any deal that didn't include it.
Right.
But there is something out there, I believe, that could solve the problem, and that is there is a piece of legislation that was just introduced this week from the House, and by the way, that's where almost everything good about immigration has come from, and that is H.R. 4760, Securing America's Future Act. It's introduced by House Judiciary and Homeland Security Committee chairs Michael McCaul and Bob Goodlatte. It's also signed on by Labrador and a few others. This is really, in a sense, kind of what the grand bargain would be, and I'm going to get to some of those specific topics you just mentioned, Malcolm. What it would do, by the way, the great compromise here is it would allow a DACA amnesty, and let us be clear that we're talking about amnesty. Let's not play around with language. As I said, right now, the political climate in Washington is pure poison.
Dr. Steinlight, do you think this deal can get done? I mean, you're laying out a grand strategy here. I hear where you're going. Do you think this even happens, or is this a lottery wish list?
No, I, I, well, I it's a wish list, mm-hmm. but we're getting to the point of a standoff, and mm-hmm. there's going to have to be some give.
Right, on both sides, time, clearly.
On both the time frame's running out on DACA.
Dr. Stanley, when you say, well, it really is amnesty. See, here's part of the problem. when you run for president of the country, you have to take a stand on some issues. You're going to have to take a stand. One of the stands the president took was no amnesty. Amnesty is mm-hmm. a dirty word to a lot of conservatives, clearly. It's become, oh, we can't do that because they broke the law. So there never seems to be a conclusion to that. In addition, the president ran on this wall. That was a signature piece of his campaign. Dennis Santiago, I want to go to you next here, and I want to ask you, talk about, real briefly here, this amnesty and DACA. You hear Dr. Steinlight put it out there very well with the various pieces of this immigration stool. What happens in regards to, these are two big fundamental issues. You've got the Dreamer Act, which is a problem, the wall. I mean, these are the big problems, fundamentally, that the president is going to have a problem with, you think?
Yeah, he already has a problem. He had a problem from day one. I mean, you know, if you go all the way back to when all this stuff was being debated, bottom line, there's no easy or clean way to put all of the immigration issues back in good order. It's a dirty process that involves pain.
Right.
It involves pain,
well said,
on the part of the people in the country. It also involves pain on the part of people that are affected by it. It's because it's going to displace people against their will. And, that's not a nice or easy thing to do. It has repercussion effects.
Yeah, because we're dealing, Dennis, we're dealing with decades of abuse here. That's you just said it really well. I mean, we're dealing with decades and decades of abuse. And how do you fix that with a magic wand and the program that Dr. Steinlight throws out there? So, okay, we need this, 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 and this. But again, like you say, you can't seem to get them all to agree. I mean, do you think, here, let's narrow this in the conversation a little bit. Do you think the Democrats will ever agree to the wall, Dennis? Yes or no?
Eventually, yes.
Eventually, yes. Cool.
I do not believe they will ever agree to throwing these DACA kids out.
Exactly. So that was the other question that I was going to. Right. So DACA itself. Will the Republicans agree to saving the Dreamers, do you think?
So there's the basis of a very interesting compromise when you look at it. You know, it's like,
right.
you save the Dreamers in exchange for building a wall.
Well, that's that dirty word amnesty, which is why the president came out and said, he said, hey, listen, I'll take the hit for this. I'm used to taking the hit. Remember, he said that in that meeting. Well, that's what that means.
You know, and he's very much a pragmatist. The guy, for everything people says, he calculates. He's calculated it in order to get the one thing that he does want, which is a more secure border.
Right.
He's going to have to make a compromise for things that are already inside the border because that's tough. You know, it's very hard to get people to give up stuff.
I think there's something to what I'm asking here because this to me is the common denominator. I don't see why people like-minded can't get into the room and solve these kinds of problems. What do you think, Ava?
I think the Republicans want DACA, to be honest with you. I think that's the little secret here in this whole negotiation.
Right.
I think there are just as many Republicans that want it as there are Democrats. And I think there will be amnesty. And I don't think Trump will get his border wall. And I don't think there will be immigration reform.
Wow. So,
I don't have a lot of faith in this.
Ilana, what's your 2 cents on it?
Well, I'm going back to your original question. Back in another lifetime, I ran for Congress twice.
Wow.
And I got right into the middle, and somebody asked me, why do you want to get into that muck and swamp? Mm-hmm. And it was a good question, because what I found, one of the things I ran on was term limits. What I found was that the real priorities for politicians is not what's best for the country or even for their constituency, but what's best for them. And the man I ran against retired in the middle of who ran on term limits originally, left his post in the middle of the fifth term with $5 million in the bank and took another job. So, you know, I think that there is a very serious problem that maybe we're ignoring because we like to think that our representatives and senators are really have our best interests in heart. But I think that probably the majority of them do not.
Well said.
They have job security.
Well said. All right, last word. We're going to take off immigration. We're going to move the ball here. But Dr. Stanley, give me your last response on how this thing works out.
Well, I think how this thing works out is that to get a brand deal, we're going to have to go past establishing DACA. There's going to have to be, I think we all understand that there are, you know, we're told there are 11 million illegal aliens here. When I started working at CIS in 2003, there were 11 million illegal aliens here. We know that number is way higher. What's going to happen is there's going to have to be, and I could be shot by some people for saying it, but to be realistic, to get any of the other things that I've talked about,
mm-hmm.
okay, ending the visa lottery, getting biometric stuff for secure entry and exits, cutting numbers down.
You think we're going to have to save the dreamers, correct?
We're going to have to also
okay.
amnesty
okay.
A much higher proportion of those people who have been here for
All right, Dr. Stein, I thank you. But you're going to have to save, you've got millions and millions and millions of these people. You're not going to bust them back out, I mean, clearly. So why are we kidding ourselves?
We've had eight so far. We've had eight amnesties.
All of the amnesties that we've had happen, we never get immigration reform, which is always promised, but it never comes to fruition.
Right. No enforcement. We never get the enforcement.
Exactly.
And that began with IRCA under Reagan. Reagan was really, it was one great mistake. The promised enforcement never happens. And I think that's, when you're saying reform, I think you're correctly saying the rule of law, and we don't get it.
Okay. All right. Real quickly now, let me, I got to, all right. I've got a transition here, and I want to talk about, real briefly, I just want to take a couple of moments before we break here, and I want to talk about the special counsel a moment, which is, of course, Robert Mueller, the showdown with him and Trump. And specifically, what I want to talk about is the president testifying. There's a lot of conversation about him, should he or should he not testify in the room with Mueller? Or should they be written questions, or should he just put his thumb up and say, I'm not going to, you know. Dennis, let me have you respond quickly. We'll all take 30 seconds on this one. Dennis, what are your thoughts on this, this testimony from the president with special counsel?
My personal thought on this is I am tired of watching this circus. It has gone on for far too long. I mean, the 2016 election is over, for God's sakes. It's time to move on.
What happened to your sense of humor, Dennis? Come on. Ilana Friedman. Ilana Friedman. He's lost her sense of humor, Ilana. Come on now. So talk to me on the special.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm with Dennis. I'm sick of it. But I am sick of it because he's wasting our money. In the first 4 months, he wasted $7 million on what? They have no proof that there's anything relating to collusion that has anything to do with the Trump team on the just the opposite. If they're looking at collusion, they should be looking at Hillary Clinton, not Donald Trump. They're wasting our money and they're wasting our time, and it's enough.
So should he testify or not?
No.
No.
I don't think he should. I don't think he should testify. He's got bigger things to do.
All right, so,
and much more important things.
All right, so Ava, can the president not testify, do you think, or is this going to have to happen?
He can invoke his executive privilege, and he could also do a written affidavit, mm-hmm. you know, with his counsel.
Right.
So he has options, but yeah, I think the interesting point is what Ilana just said. The investigators are going to be investigating something else very soon.
Okay. All right. So, Stephen Starlight, last word on this. 30 seconds. Talk to me. Does the president testify? Is it a person-to-person testimony? Does he do it as an affidavit in writing? What happens with special counsel?
I don't see that the president needs to do anything. This is the theater of the absurd. This is a kangaroo court. Hmm. The only reason this is going on, unfortunately, is that about half of the American people don't believe he's a legitimate president. This is all political.
Okay, wow. Colonel Jim Warshak is here, and we're going to take on these comments where the president referred to other countries as shitholes. That's coming right up.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Let the
the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. So it was the comment heard around the world, or so that's what they're saying exactly. So I want everybody to define to me what a shithole is, first of all. Well, these are the comments from President Trump, supposedly. Now, I say supposedly because the president did come out and say he didn't specifically say exactly that. Of course, Durbin, Senator Durbin, says it differently. And of course, this is what you get in Washington. You never get really a straight answer. Let's take this on here. Colonel Jim Warshak is here. He's retired from United States Air Force. He served as Deputy Director for Intelligence for U.S. Central Command and has worked on the White House National Security Council. And Colonel Warshak is a contributor and weekly columnist and commentator here at America Out Loud. All right, Colonel, let's talk about this here now. Listen, we're at the point of this immigration deal. The conversation's moving along. Got the left and the right in the room. He got real kudos for the meeting last Tuesday and opening up the White House. That was quite a trick pony there. You don't see that often, but that was fascinating. President was getting high marks from all kinds of people with that. And then the next thing happened, which was a conversation that I guess was quasi-private from what I understand. It wasn't the media in there or anything, but one of the senators from the left were clearly thrilled to release that information to the public to create, well, kind of a shitstorm, about a shithole. What say you?
Well, you know, it's not definitive if he actually used the term, as you noted.
Right.
Senator Dick Durbin is the one who, for the most part, made it public in his follow-up to that meeting. But I think from the standpoint of the way I looked at it, and I've served in many shitholes in my career around the world in the military, so I can give you, you know, everything you want to know about them from A to Z. And it's a general term pretty much used in the military amongst, you know, the officers and enlisted folks, because we've experienced them. So we don't see it as a bad thing. We kind of look at it as, wow, he's bringing it down to the way we describe it. I really think there's perhaps, once again, as I always talk about, part of the strategy, part of I need to get attention so people listen to an important thing, mm-hmm. that we're, you know, important discussion that we're having. This certainly did it, as you stated at the beginning, how it got all the attention.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
So it's an attention getter.
The reference immediately was racism, because it was referred to as the African countries and countries like Haiti as well, and others that were sort of, and a lot of the African countries, that it was sort of went, I don't know how that happened, but it went from that remark to these kinds of countries. Who made that leap? Was it the Senator Durbin or the media, or was it Trump? I don't even know who made that leap. Do you know?
It seemed to be a combination of the media and the political left. They're, you know, they are so afraid of Trump because mm-hmm. he has had so much success.
Right.
And, you know, I say this all the time because he has. Their only way to counter everything, and this is the way the left counters everything. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about a particular topic, mm-hmm. you know, if it's Islam, they're going to call you Islamophobic. If you're talking about race, it's racism.
Well, it's always
if
racism or feminism. It's always one of the
feminism.
Other.
It's
yeah. Well, that's what it is. Again, I call it the ism disease. It seems to me the left has the ism disease, and you can put ism on a lot of these words, and then you can kind of go there. You know, there's an interesting comment you put in the featured op-ed you have at America Out Loud, Colonel, and it's this. You say this: while the reality is that liberals and the political left have no capacity to actually solve these issues, either in America or around the world, they want the issue. It's called demographic engineering. Wow. Quite fascinating. Explain that.
What they have here is they look at culture, they look at demographics, and they design an excuse. When to describe that demographic. You know, they will throw, they'll use poverty, they'll use welfare, they'll use whatever it is. And the things that are the problem areas, they will turn it around and not take blame for it if it's, in fact, you know, when we hear about Detroit and Chicago with the problems, we say it's because of poor leadership, it's because of policies and what have you. They have to deflect that. They are engineering a response to every problem that they may have very well caused based on their policies.
And when we've been talking about immigration for decades, I mean, how many brilliant people does it take in Washington to come up with an answer to our immigration woes? I mean, this is a problem that goes back decades, and we've had administration after administration after administration not solve the problem. I think it's quite perplexing, but I think the answer is not too complex. You understand?
Absolutely, and you're exactly right. They don't want to solve the problem.
Totally. You come from the school that this is all strategic in nature on his end and not really a terrible surprise, you're saying.
In order to rise above all the media that's out there, all the issues, he has to periodically, every now and then, say something outrageous.
Right.
To rise above. It's kind of an attention getter.
I think until we define what we really want for immigrants and immigration in this country, are we taking people just because we take them and because there's a need? Because the whole world is full of people who are in need. Is this a science experiment gone wrong? Or are we really trying to improve society here? What is the value of immigration? I think people need to start asking themselves from the left, the right, and the center as far as what do we really want in this country? Is it to raise our standard of living? Is it to decline our standard of living? Answer that question, friends, and then let's continue the conversation about immigration and get this problem solved once and for all, or there won't be a country left to worry about it, I'll tell you.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Hear the mamas and papas there, California dreaming. You remember those days, friends, with the gold paved streets and the tall women and, oh man, the skateboards, surfboards and the Beach Boys and Malibu. Oh boy, the cop shows out there, Chips. Remember all that? What's going on with California these days? A lot of people seem to be uptight. There seems to be, I think, some of the biggest complaints I'm hearing is the cost of living. I mean, this is a perfect example, from what I hear, of the haves and the have-nots, that you either have a lot of money and very wealthy there, or you're struggling. Seems to be the homeless community is growing substantially. And so very interesting column we have at America Out Loud, friends. Why California is becoming a third world country? Well, we got someone here to answer that for us, the author of that column right here. Dr. Ron Martinelli is here. That article you wrote, that is right, the op-ed on America Out Loud, it has garnered a tremendous amount of interest, Ron. It's really, people are very intrigued with some of the points you put in that pieces. I'm hearing a lot of comments, and people are just really want to read it and understand. And you know why I think that is? A lot of people are trying to really understand California. A lot's happened since Reagan left California. I mean, since he no longer is there, clearly. But, I mean, it's changed a lot, Ron. And it's a total different animal now. And I think many people are saying we'll probably never get back there. What's the biggest point that comes to your mind?
Well, I think it's just so hard to live in the state of California now. And when people that are residents of California, and I'm a lifelong resident of California that finally escaped and I moved to Texas with my business and with my family, it is that they pay so much tax money and they get so little service back from the state and municipal governments. That's one
thing. Now, Ron,
thing.
Hold on. Let's tear that apart right there. What I want to know from you, that's a great point you just make. What are they doing with all the money?
Well, God knows what they're doing with the money. Okay. I think, for instance, with respect to Caltrans, which is the agency that builds all of our roads and freeways outside of the municipalities, I think it all goes to pensions. And they've got an out-of-control pension system there, and our roads are just decrepit. I mean, as soon as you leave the state of California when you drive, and I frequently commute in and out of the state of California in a vehicle, you find that all the other states that lead into California have much better freeway systems than we do.
So they're not reinvesting it back into the infrastructure, then, you're saying? They're not invest. So what are they spending it on? I mean, is there any idea? Is it the homeless population? Is it what is? I mean, they got to be doing something with all the tax money, because clearly they're one of the highest tax states out there, Ron.
The biggest problems we have is the state has been going seriously bankrupt.
Yeah, they got a big debt right now of $247 billion.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And, $33 billion of the state income goes to illegal aliens. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
So is that where a lot of the money's going then? Is this because they're big on this illegal immigration trade, I'll call it. I mean, they're big on that, aren't they? The politicians out there. Why do they find that so attractive?
Well, I think it to be quite honest with you and be very direct, I think it just widens their base. And politics, and we see this on a national level, politics is not about what helps the American people move forward or what helps the citizens of California move forward. It's what solidifies the political base of the Democratic Party. And so, of course, they have an open borders mentality. It is a sanctuary state, which is quite unique. And when you have $33 billion going to subsidize and support an illegal alien community, including an illegal alien community that's a criminal community, what do you think that the taxpayers of California, how do you think they could benefit with $33 billion right. in their infrastructure?
It is so very important because it's not really to improve our lives. And this is sad because that's the whole idea supposed to be to get into politics is to serve the people, the constituents who put you there. Here's what I really don't understand. When it comes to the smart, talented, intellectual people in California, and I've got a lot of friends out there like you have, Ron, a lot of bright people out there, a lot of amazing people out there. It's a great culture. It's fabulous to be out there and spend some time and turn yourself in. It's a great culture out there. Here's the thing. Why aren't they reeling these politicians in more? Well, to take a term that recently the president had used, why are they letting the politicians make and turn California into a shithole?
Well, I've got to tell you that it's because the people that are working, and I spoke about this in my article, the people that are working so hard that they don't have time to become a PAC or a political action committee. They don't have time to demonstrate. They don't have time to write letters and to make calls. And that's a shame. But because they don't have the time and the energy to do it, because they're working so hard to pay taxes and get their families squared away, that it allows the entitled masses that don't have anything else to do because they're not working, they're not producing, to get out there and become politically active. And I think it's just as simple as that.
Ron, where's the tipping point on this?
Well, I'm going to be very pessimistic, okay, because I'm in my 60s now. I've been a small business owner for many years. I, of course, worked in municipal government as a police detective. So I have sort of a global experience with the state of California. And, of course, in my business, I've traveled in every single city there is in the state of California. So I know the state like the back of my hand. I will tell you pessimistically that we are never going to see a change in California, because right now California mirrors demographically those people that are paying taxes, which are 49% of the population, and those people that are not paying any taxes and live on some level of government subsidy is 51%, and they are the voting public. So when you have a voting public that exceeds the numbers of voters as the people that are working to subsidize those people, you're never gonna see a change. And the Democrat administration, whether it's municipal or it's state, are doing everything they possibly can in concert with the federal colleagues, like the Nancy Pelosi's, like the Dianne Feinstein's, to ensure their Democratic base.
Right.
And when that happens, the poor, hardworking, taxpaying middle class and the business owners that make over $250,000 a year, they're just done for. You will never see a Republican administration in the state of California.
Well, that
again
is a dire prediction right there. Maybe it's time, Ron, to create a new rule in California, and that not so much that in order to vote you have to pay taxes. I'm not saying that exactly, but what I am saying, that how about in reverse psychology, that if you take any government assistance from the system, you are not able to vote.
Well, boy, that would be an interesting paradigm.
Dave Smith, he's the most recognized police trainer and author in the industry today. Also, Sergeant Betsy Smith is here. Betsy's a police officer for 29 years. She's a law enforcement trainer for over 20 of those years, and she's consultant trainer to the industry. And by happenstance, friends, Betsy and Dave happen to be a couple and are married for many years. So very unusual, and they are one of those power couples. So congratulations first, Betsy and Dave, that you're one of the few couples that can work together and play together. That's good. I like that. I'm envious. All right, let's start here. I want to draw out this scenario for people. So just hear me out here now. The year now is 2022. It's a new utopia in America. It's a new liberal agenda. The left won in 2020. They took over Congress, both the House and the Senate. All guns have now been banned. They are banned, illegal. In fact, they actually went door to door to collect these guns in searches. Now, what happens next is the question. Well, the latest news reports on CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, Washington Post, New York Times, and every other outlet in the country, basically, is this. And here's the headlines. The latest of too many school shootings since the ban of guns has spiked the interest of Congress and President Joe Biden and Vice President Warren. And once again, this violence rocks the nation. The question is, for how many days? Question is, will this renewed urgency for action fade away, or will Congress and the president finally act? Well, I gotta tell you, it's a horrific scene in 2022, Betsy and Dave, and I'm wondering, what happens then? So Dave, take that away from me. Let's start with you here in 2022. You heard the utopia we're in. This really happened now. We're now at that point. What happens next?
Okay, well, we've seen a further restriction on civil liberties because there's no counterbalance to anything the federal government does. This is the republic that Plato so wanted, and yet at the same time, I think even he understood could never possibly work. People who are coming up with ideas without any real material world, no empirical proofs. So we keep bouncing from one failed idea to the other. Meanwhile, human evil still flourishes. And the very problem is the people who we've entrusted to protect us, we have so disempowered, we have so tenderized and created. They're busy worrying about procedural justice and not protecting the community. And chaos is reigning.
Yep, chaos is reigning. That's exactly it, yeah. So, Sergeant Betsy, let's talk a little bit about this utopia in 2022. I mean, it's a sad state. And the point is that I really question often, Betsy, like, what do they really want? What is the ultimate goal here? I really try to understand that, honestly. And you know me, Betsy, I put myself in the other shoes all the time. I may not like the shoes, but I do wear them here and there. And I'm wondering, how do they think that's going to fix anything, Betsy?
Well, first of all, in 2022, with that scenario, Malcolm, I am talking to you from my bunker in northern Wyoming.
And so my Wi-Fi's a little sketchy here. You know, what are we looking at in that kind of scenario? We're looking at so much less safety, and yet we like to talk about it. And why is that? This is being entirely now media driven, and we have been inundated now in the last few weeks with all this talk about gun control and boycott the NRA, and we're not talking about the real issues. We're not talking about what really happened, for example, in the Parkland shooting. We're not talking about the epic failures of what? Government on the state, local, and federal level failed this shooter, failed his victims, failed that school system. And yet, what's a utopian society? More government.
Many of our fellow Americans have forgotten much of the history of this country. The role of individual responsibility, for instance, the role of religion and of faith, the Christian and Judaic principles this nation was founded upon. You know, it's a history of men and women crossing oceans to come to a land barren of even the few comforts they may have had in Europe. 150 years later, the children of these brave colonists decided to form a new nation to cast off the bondage and oppressions that they thought they had left behind in Europe, which were now seeping into their everyday lives again. Well, these founders of our nation conceived a Declaration of Independence. They fought a long war, and they charted a government whose mission was to provide freedoms guaranteed for all citizens of this fledgling nation. Well, these guarantees are contained within the Constitution and the first 10 amendments to that document. They became known as the coveted Bill of Rights. Well, America was a new idea. No nation had ever had the freedoms that we enjoy today and that are based upon this historic document charted 229 years ago. Well, these men were not perfect, my friends, but show me a man that is. But they produced a uniquely representative republic that was and still is the envy of the world. Please welcome to the show our panel discussion here, Terry Beatley. And she founded Hosea Initiative. It's a nonprofit educational organization and authored the book, What If We've Been Wrong? Jim McKay is here. He's a political commentator, as you know, radio producer. And Jim is here along with Ava Armstrong. Again, political commentator, radio personality. Ava is an author as well. You know both of those. They're regulars here and producers of our program here. I want to talk about religion being the centerpiece in the founding of this country. But today it seems that this has been eliminated from most public venues and from people's lives. Terry, let's start, and let me put you right on the spot here and ask you, is this a failing of our society today?
Oh, I definitely think it's a failure in our society today, primarily because our young people they're not being taught that our rights come from God. They're being indoctrinated into the notion of our rights come from government, but they're not being taught, you know, either by their parents or through church or you know, public school, that our rights come from God. And when we take our eyes off of that, where our rights come from, that's a slippery slope, and we're halfway down that slippery slope. Right, Malcolm?
Yeah, it seems that we are. I mean, it does seem that we are. I've been critical of this, Ava, for a long time now, with the fact that, you know, it started with taking prayer out of, you know, out of the schools. And then, you know, it got really nasty. I mean, it's been nasty even in, you know, even in sports, where they're kneeling in disrespect to nations and God and just individual freedoms. I mean, they've taken what we fought for, what we've died for, what this country is, and they've kind of rubbing our face into it. I don't know, there's something messy about the whole thing. There seems to be, I mean, there are a lot of patriots out there, Ava. I listen, you know that full well. You're associated with patriots every day. People that are putting the good fight out there. We talk about these people every day. They're representative of America Out Loud. They're representative of our country. But somehow it's the simple things of just prayer, pledge of allegiance, even the dinner table at home in the family.
True. And I always think of the words of Benjamin Franklin. We gave you a republic if you can keep it. And that's really going to be our challenge as, you know, Americans, is to, you know, inform our young people what this country is about. And so many schools now have no mention of God in any way. No prayer. There's, you know, even the Pledge of Allegiance is now being taken away. And I'm very concerned about our common American culture being destroyed. That's what keeps us together. That's what keeps a diverse society together, is a common American theme, a common culture.
That is a great point. And that seems to me what's missing right now is we're not rallying around a common theme. You know, the one time I can think of in the last 20 years where Americans were really Americans, the only time I can think about, and you know where that moment was, all of you do, it was right at 9/11. That was the moment when the country rallied together and they forgot that they were, you know, whether they had a D, an R, or an I, or whatever they had. They really became Americans, and there was an outrage, and they stood up for justice, feeling that we were being violated, that we were hit in a way that we hadn't been before, certainly in our lifetimes. But I think we sort of lose that momentum, Jim. We forget all of that, and then we go back to our fight, and we go back to our ways, and then, as Eva says, well, then what happens to the Republic? And as she quotes Ben Franklin, I mean, what does happen to the Republic at that point when we're not rallying around a common theme or something where we can say, you know, we stand for this, Jim? And we don't see that a lot today.
No, we don't. We have two factions in the country. We have those who want the American Republic. We have those who have created this hyphenated society, Spanish American, Black American, Asian American stuff. And that is done purposely to divide this melting pot, to divide the unity, the assimilation that took place in the 17th, 18th, 19th, and good part of the 20th century. All of a sudden, it wasn't good enough to be just an American. It wasn't fashionable to be an American. And now we're dividing it. And they divide it for a purpose. The purpose is to attract different political factions to their false promises. Once you've done that, you have nothing more to stand for. And the way they maintain that is by giving these people, this underclass of minorities, the people who are disenfranchised, giving them. I mean, 50% of the country is on some type of government assistance. And when you have 50% of the people on some type of assistance, that's all you need to get the vote. That's that rainbow coalition. And it's not a rainbow. It's really a thunderstorm of disaster.
Well, Jim, isn't it true, though, that if you want to keep the power, if you've got the power and you want to keep the power, isn't it true that the way to do that is to keep the people divided, which is what you're saying? But that's kind of part of the strategy, though, isn't it? What's unique about Dr. Mitchell is he interrogated 14 of the most senior so-called high-value detainees in the U.S. And, of course, his book everybody has read, Enhanced Interrogation. And if you haven't, you get that out on Amazon or really also at the America Out Loud store. We have it right in there. So, okay, Dr. Mitchell, so this is the second terrorist attack in New York City in, I think, about 6 weeks or so, as I recall. And then, you know, we had that foiled attack in Texas that just was that a lot of people just overlooked because nothing happened. They got it while they were in the act. Let's start with the fact of this guy now that they've caught up there, the culprit here in New York City, Dr. Mitchell. I think the big thing with these guys, you know, they refer to this term lone wolf, which, you know, I have concerns and problems with that term lone wolf. I don't really get that. But beyond that, What is it with the enemy combatant? Do we charge this guy, this argument that we consistently have, do we charge the guy as an enemy combatant? Do we leave him with the FBI and the NYPD? What's your honest views on that as far as these guys once we have them?
Well, first, I think we need to understand what's meant by enemy combatant. You know, an enemy combatant is somebody who's in combat with the United States. And you can be a lawful enemy combatant. And in fact, that's what you are until you're captured if you're part of a standing army that we happen to be fighting. So, for example, if we were fighting the Iraqi army, they would be enemy combatants to us, and we would be enemy combatants to them. Under the international laws of war, there are two kinds of enemy combatants, right? There's lawful enemy combatants and unlawful enemy combatants. And these folks who are attacking us from ISIS or Al-Qaeda or some other variation of these militant groups, they should, in my view, be considered unlawful enemy combatants. It gets a little fuzzy when they're U.S. citizens or when they're here under some sort of, like a green card or something.
Right, right.
So in my view, what happens is if you're here on a green card, you've made some sort of an allegiance not to act out while you're in our country, and that should just simply be yanked, and you should be immediately subject to deportation, as with anyone with you under similar circumstances that supported you. So I think those people overseas who are fighting us should be considered unlawful enemy combatants. And then things like the Geneva Conventions, Article 3 and other articles just don't apply to them.
And they don't get the same rights. And then, of course, then we're talking places like Gitmo, right?
Right. Well, I got to tell you, I have mixed feelings about Gitmo. Gitmo, to me, is it's a resort for terrorists. I mean, it's not. I don't want them on U.S. soil. I want to be clear about that. But I'd like them in a federal max. There's a big difference between it. 23 hours a day in a cell, 1 hour a day, exercising in the yard to get a little daylight,
right.
Held by yourself. Not at all the sort of thing that's going on in Gitmo, where they're allowed to pray in groups and play soccer together and have they have a library that they get to read.
You know, you think about it, what's wrong with this picture? And it has been ongoing, Dr. Mitchell, where we worry more about the rights of, as you say, these combatants and these criminals and these thugs. We worry more about that, or politicians do, than they do actually the rights of Americans. And it really does befuddle you. I mean, you have to just shake your head and wonder why. I want to loop back. I want to talk about how this guy got into the country, who was from Bangladesh. But before we do, I just want to circle back around. When we talked about where we would put these cats, whether it's, again, FBI, NYPD, you talk about a federal prison versus Guantanamo Bay, but not on our soil. So what are the options? Where do we send them then? I didn't quite get that. Where do we put them?
Well, I think we have, whatever we do, it has to be legal. I don't have any desire to do anything that is not legal. And so under our current conditions, we really don't, our current legal system, because the Congress really hasn't addressed this issue. The options are the federal law enforcement options or the state law enforcement options, So my guess would be that this guy that they just caught is either going to be treated and tried under federal terrorism charges or state terrorism charges or both, depending on, because he could be tried under both. And it's likely to happen in New York. I have some issues about these kinds of civilian trials, because you may remember that the terrorist who was one of the masterminds behind the embassy attack in Libya that killed our ambassador was found not guilty of murder by a jury in, I think, New York. And to me, that's disturbing, because he participated in the attack. He helped plan the attack. He was there during the attack.
Mm-hmm.
But because cameras indicated that he wasn't the one who actually killed him, the jury found him not guilty of murder. But they did find him guilty, of course, of terrorism.
The chain migration that brought him in, any quick thoughts about that within the immigration system? Because clearly he was, I believe it was his cousin who actually got the papers to get here, and then they brought in, I think, a whole truckload of family members and stuff. Boy, that was really quite revealing, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was the nephew of someone who actually was able to get over here.
Okay.
This chain migration has to stop. It started really badly in the 60s. I mean, it existed before that, but not in the sort of system that it is now, in the numbers that it is now, until the mid-60s, which is when, and this is my own personal view, the Democrats just started trying to change the demographic face of the United States so that there was a higher probability that they would get elected more often.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen that with immigration over the past few years since the mid-60s. And it just has to stop, because there's really very little vetting of those people that come over under those circumstances.
Well, and wasn't the uncle on the lottery plan, Jim? Wasn't he on the lottery plan?
Yeah.
Yeah. So here you go.
Right. But once he got over here,
right,
he could bring people over on
right.
migration.
Right.
And that's what he did. And the problem, like I said, the problem with that is that there's very little vetting. There's a requirement that they have some kind of an education or something like that. But you can bet that the education in Bangladesh doesn't really match the education in the U.S.
Well, what the hell's that got to do with anything? I mean, what's the education got to do? I don't, whether the guy or gal's got an education or not doesn't mean anything to me, you know? I mean, you know, that's kind of funny. Or if they got an education, Jim. So what does that mean, that they're smart enough to maybe put together a more sophisticated bomb to blow us up?
I'm just repeating what I think the law actually says. I can't remember off the top of my head what all the requirements are, but there's two or three requirements, and they're not very sophisticated. And easily paid.
You're right.
And they'll, you know, I think it just needs to stop.
So we're entitled in this one, Violence in Our Schools. Where are the solutions? And it's a pretty big question. And the conversation is as hot could be. A lot of people sense that this may be the time that we get something done. Whatever that something is, we have to determine as Americans here. But what is that something so we can protect our kids? Clearly, what happened in Parkland is not acceptable. Well, here on the show is our panel discussion here. Lieutenant Randy Sutton is here. He's a 34-year law enforcement veteran, retired from the Las Vegas Police Department. Dennis Santiago is here. He's a global risk and financial analyst. Lieutenant Joseph Panguero is here. He's a retired police lieutenant. And Ava Armstrong is here. She's a political commentator, radio personality. Ava's an author. Welcome, everybody, to the show. And let me read this to you. Back in 1973, while governor of California, Ronald Reagan said this: "With freedom goes responsibility." Sir Winston Churchill once said, "You can have 10,000 regulations and still not have respect for the law." We might start with the Ten Commandments. If we lived by the Golden Rule, there would be no need for other laws. Wow. Those are some profound words from the previous president, and at that time, governor of California. I want to start with this. When you take a look at all the conversations we're having right now at this very moment, how did we arrive at this moment in America? How did we arrive right here at this split moment in America? Lieutenant Joe Panguero.
Well, good morning, everyone. And Malcolm, this is an important question because I write a lot of columns and a lot of different articles about this. And for the last several years, I've been writing about what I call the approaching crossroad. And the crossroad, I think, is very broad. Mm-hmm. It's the crossroad of who we think we are as a country, as a people. We see the world changing. And I think all the violence that we see and the things that are going on today is evidence that not only have we reached that crossroad, but we've started down a completely unknown and different path. Societal breakdown, the changes in what everyone is willing to agree on is the right way to go ahead. We see the complete split in our country, that it's not a matter of we all have the same basic beliefs anymore, only we see it a little differently. We now have completely different beliefs, and we can't agree on hardly anything. And from that comes chaos and difficulty that we're seeing every single day, and it's spilling out.
And one other thought to add to that, Joe, is this, is that our kids are watching all this.
Yes, the kids are living it.
Yeah, but you know, where are the adults in any of this is what I'm asking you. The kids, yeah. What I'm saying is the kids are watching all this. Your teenagers, your kids, the generation that's coming up, they're watching us, and we are not behaving as adults, I have to tell you. So, Dennis Santiago, pick up where Lieutenant Joe Panguero was just talking about, because you philosophically look at this country all the time and talk about that intersection of where we're at. And so, in your opinion, how do we arrive here at this moment in America?
Oh, we've been meandering towards this moment for quite a while, obviously. And we got here because of a combination of several things. The internet in particular has had a tremendous impact, far more than people realize, on their lives.
That's right.
And that it has allowed individual opinions, and in particular strange and macabre individual opinions, to come to the forefront because of the way that that medium works. And you're seeing a breakdown in what I call Internet America, mm-hmm. which is very, very different from what I call real America. And the two are not presently aligned, and it is causing a tremendous amount of social confusion out there. Mm-hmm. It has, at this point, caused a number of breakdowns in our infrastructure and caused us to not keep track of things that we should keep track of, mm-hmm. do things that just don't make sense, and it creates cracks and fissures in society.
Well, you may have
that
something
manifest.
There. Yeah, you may have something when you talk about the alignment of where we're off. There's definitely something off. Lieutenant Randy Sutton, let me ask you this here. With the school shootings now and the fact that these are gun-free zones, and we've had this conversation before about gun-free zones, I mean, it's an oxymoron that you might as well put a sign up and say, criminals welcome, please come in here. That might be the alternative sign we might put up for this. But anyways, talk to me about our schools themselves. We talk about hardening the schools. Do we make them into fortresses? Do we use walls, fences, scanners, more cameras, lock them down? How do we get the schools safe, Randy?
Well, there can be some target hardening that takes place. There's some very basic stuff that can be done to target harden. I just actually received some information today that's very, very disturbing about this latest shooting in Florida, and that is that this suspect actually walked into the school through an unlocked door, which is supposed to be kept locked, and he walked in with a rifle case. It was and walked right by a security guard who did nothing.
Wow.
So, you know, you talk about target hardening. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's got to be some common sense that enters into this equation. Mm-hmm. And what we saw in this Florida shooting is just an epic, epic fail of law enforcement mm-hmm. on every scale. I've never seen anything
exactly.
like this. And there needs
exactly.
to be... There needs to be some people that answer for this.
Well, Randy, Governor Rick Scott came out and he says he wants armed officers at all the schools in the state. Do you support that?
I do. I support arming teachers, quite honestly.
Right.
Joe Panguero and I actually had a discussion on my show the other day that, you know, both of us, the best solution mm-hmm. is to arm a cadre of teachers and staff members that can be on site all the time. It's the most cost effective, and I think it would be the most effective for the safety of the children.
Ava, so let's pick it up there. So look at all the parents and the families that were, I mean, you know, come on. I mean, 17 people were brutally murdered. I mean, it's unimaginable that this happens in this day and age. There's also a lot of reports coming through that we talked about at the top of the show here about very possibly Broward County officers that potentially did not go in there, along with that security officer who now is resigned and tried to get out of there with his pension before he was going to be, dismissed. So as a parent, as somebody who, you know, you think of all the parents, Ava, that have children in schools around the country. And I mean, I think a lot of people are going to begin to homeschool. That's probably going to be a wave of the future now. And number two, there's got to be people that are afraid to send their kids to school tomorrow morning.
Yes. One of the major problems I've seen over the years anyways, schools are now very large institutions.
Sure.
They're huge, and there are many students bused from far, far away mm-hmm. to these large institutions. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing, we don't have neighborhood schools anymore. So that's part of the problem, is the sheer numbers of people mm-hmm. that we need to keep safe in this school environment. I would say, you know, from my own vantage point as a parent of a student in a school, I would definitely want armed officers there who are skilled shooters. This particular tragic event is an epic fail for law enforcement, and I have many law enforcement people who follow me. I have some law enforcement people in my family, and this breaks their heart when they see this, and I know the guys on here feel the same way. The thing that bothers me the most about this whole event, as tragic as it is, I'm thinking of the Rahm Emanuel quote, "Never let a serious crisis go to waste."